This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Joining us now on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score, on the Bernstein and McKnight Show is Brian Geltzeiler, at Hoops Critic on Twitter, founder of HoopsCritic.com. He works for SiriusXM NBA and NBA TV, and he's always generous with his time in talking basketball, especially the playoff variety here. So a stolen win, is that in the category of a stolen win, or can you say that about a team that works that hard as the Cavs did, Brian, to take one despite not playing great?
That's a stolen win. That's a stolen win. Because you know what? The Raptors have that game under control. And they just offensively down the stretch. Now, granted, you know, Valanciunas missed a mountain of bunnies. A mountain of bunnies, okay? With all that said, the game was still there for the taking for them. It really was. And, you know, just enough of their ISO garbage down the stretch hurt them. I mean, it wasn't the whole time, but just enough of it. I mean, you had Lowry at one point when they were down four in the overtime, dribble down on the wing and fire a three with no one else seeing the ball with, you know, 18 seconds left in the shot clock, like nonsense like that. You know, it's so they just enough, the Toronto Raptors, to lose that game. And guys, I'll tell you something else. These are the kinds of games that you lose you a series. Ones that you had in hand that you let slip away. Because I'm going to tell you something that's happening with the Cavaliers. They're getting stronger. They're getting better. They ended the Indiana series much stronger than they started the Indiana series, and defensively they continue to improve. Yes, the Raptors, you know, pretty much had a lid on the bucket in the fourth quarter and couldn't get anything to go down, but Cleveland didn't play no role in that. Cleveland defended really, really well in that fourth quarter. And a guy that everybody in Cleveland's going to want to bag on in Kevin Love, who, again, couldn't throw it in the ocean for them last night, was also a huge, huge presence defensively and on the glass down the stretch of that game. And I give Ty Lue credit because he's dancing with what brought him. We've seen this in the past with Ty Lue. When things are rough for them, he defaults to bigger lineups, and it helps him get his better players on the floor. Once again last night, closes with Thompson, Love, and James on the floor together, gets a lot out of Thompson and Love late, including Thompson on that enormous possession late in the overtime, switching on to DeRozan and forcing the ball out of DeRozan's hand with an effective switch. Now, listen, if I'm DeMar DeRozan, I'm finding a way to go up against Thompson and draw on a foul. Once you get the ball in the paint in that spot, you're DeMar DeRozan, you're an MVP candidate, you should be doing that instead of dumping that off to Van Vliet. But it doesn't take away what Thompson's been able to add in these last two games, Game 7 and Game 1 of the series.
Yeah, Brad, DeMar DeRozan's decisions aside, I find it's been tough for me to convince myself that this Raptors fold in Game 1 is the same as folds of old, because the shots were there, because they weren't able to get anything to go down. Yeah, there's a possession or two that looks real empty late, but I feel like it's not quite the same collapse as we've seen before. I wonder if you feel the same way.
Yes and no. I will say this. They're not out of the series losing Game 1. I mean, it's, you know, they outplayed the Cleveland Cavaliers for the large majority of the game. They didn't finish properly. I do agree, though, and I mentioned it earlier, they played just enough of the ISO garbage. They didn't totally default to it. They sprinkled it in at some bad times. That's much easier to get rid of than, like, for example, what they did in the second half of Game 4 of the Washington series, where in the fourth quarter when things got tight, it became all ISO all the time. They didn't do that last night, and they missed some easy shots. And listen, you're going to blame them for using Valanciunas inside when he dominated the game inside in the way that he did and they couldn't contain him? I can't blame him. And Valanciunas missed a mountain of bunnies down the stretch. I mean, what are you going to do? So I think on one hand, yes, I totally agree with that characterization that it's a little bit different than collapses of the past. By the same token, they took a team in the Cavs that played far from their best game, and they had them really where they wanted them, and it gave them life. And so it's, I guess my point is this, yes, I could see them turning around the series. I certainly had them winning the series in seven. I do still have them winning the series in seven, but it's going to be a little bit harder to turn around when the fact that you did something last night that gives a lift to your opponent, you didn't need to give your opponent a lift to. You know what I mean? Because there's a confidence factor in what happened with the Cavs last night that they don't give up for the rest of the series.
Is it possible that Brad Stevens is the best coach in the NBA right now?
Sure. Absolutely. It is very possible. I mean, listen, has he had the horses to be good enough to go far enough in the playoffs to make the finals? Not yet, and he doesn't have it again this year. But he has a system that has got a plug-and-play aspect to it. I think Danny Ainge has done a superb job of giving him depth on a roster. But Stevens has been like this for the last 3 years, where they've had issues with injuries, and guys have come in and just handled it, and handled it real well. Now, granted, listen, you're only going so far without Kyrie Irving. But by the same token, Stevens does a super job in terms of using what's at his disposal. Here's the other thing that you have to remember about the Celtics. What a superb player development program, huh? Mm-hmm. I mean, Terry Rozier was a guy that they took, everybody thought was a reach. How good does he look right now? You know, Tatum, they picked up an extra first-round pick for a guy that they thought was the best player in draft in Jason Tatum. How good does that look? Jaylen Brown was considered a reach in what was a pretty weak draft. How does that look? I mean, Ainge has done a terrific job, but part of it is Stevens' player development program, how they work guys through, the role Jay Larinaga plays with these guys in terms of individual development. So for Boston, yes, a lot of this is about Brad Stevens, and that's very fair, but we also have to be careful that we've got to credit everybody, because if this is a widespread organizational effort from Stevens to Jay Larinaga, look in the front office, Danny Ainge, Mike Zarin, who's their assistant GM, does a super job with the analytics side of things with them. This is it's what we're seeing out of Boston. Listen, I don't think Boston wins this series. I don't think they have enough talent on the floor to win this series. I think it's going to be a very close, very tight series. But with all that said, you have to give the fact that the Celtics are where they are or in the position that they're in is an absolute tribute to Stevens and the guys around him, including Danny Ainge in his front office.
Talking Hoops with Brian Geltzeiler of Hoops Critic on Twitter, SiriusXM, the NBA network as well. As much fun or not fun as the Rockets-Utah Jazz thing might be at the end of this, or how much fun the Warriors and Pelicans might be, I want to check in with Steph Curry coming back, 28 points in 27 minutes. We are still, in your opinion, on track for the Warriors-Rockets Western Conference Final, yes?
Well, duh, right?
Okay. I needed it. I needed to hear it from you. I just need to feel better about myself.
Yes, listen, I will say this about the Pels. I thought they played an excellent game last night. I thought they played superb. And in the end, it wasn't enough, right? I mean, that's just kind of the way it works against the Warriors. I thought the Pelicans played a great game last night. But, talent-wise, chemistry-wise, all of it together, you're bringing a knife to a gunfight, guys. I mean, this is you're playing against an all-time great dynasty that just took their most important player and put him back in the lineup last night. And so, again, I love the effort of the Pelicans. I think the Pelicans have a really, really promising future here. Cousins' decision is going to be a big decision. Mm-hmm. But look down there at 2-0 in the series. You see anybody beating the Warriors 4 out of 5? No. If you want to beat the Warriors in a series, you better be splitting the first two games. Because what you have to do to catch up later is going to be difficult. Listen, keep one thing in mind. When the Cleveland Cavaliers 2 years ago in the NBA Finals came back from a 3-1 deficit on them, the Warriors didn't have Kevin Durant. Okay, so and they do now. So it's a brutally difficult team to beat. I give the Pelicans a ton of credit. To me, I had the Warriors winning the title from the beginning. I still have them winning the title. I think Warriors-Houston is going to be the best playoff series we've seen in a long time. Certainly the best this year, maybe the best of the last 2 or 3 years, based upon the fact that not only is it going to be hyper-competitive, but it's going to be played at an extremely, extremely high level. With that said, I mean, yeah, listen, I think the Jazz are in a tough spot. I think the Jazz will play better than they played in game one. But without Rubio, it makes it really hard for them to give the Rockets any kind of run. So I think we're going to see those two teams in a conference final, I think they both make it a nice little break between the second round and the conference finals for everybody to rest up and get healthy.
Big picture question for you. There is a piece at Vice.com that I found fascinating. Looking at the injuries that are occurring around the league, specifically DeMarcus Cousins, Kristaps Porzingis, and then mentioning the injuries that have been suffered by guys like Embiid and Simmons and Durant and Davis, the thesis being that the average height of basketball players now at 6'7 athleticism through the roof. We talk about positionless basketball. We talk about these what they describe as a search for unicorns. And they talked to multiple doctors here, one of whom is the Bulls team physician, Brian Cole, right here at Rush University. And there is a belief that in our quest for athleticism and size, that the human body may be stressing itself out, especially with ACLs, especially with Achilles tendons, in a way that these levers are just not designed to sustain. Hey, have you heard about this theory? Has it been discussed that we're pushing the game's evolving to a point where it may not be sustainable physiologically to create these basketball players we want?
Well, here's the thing, and I have heard about this, and I do think there's some legitimacy to it, but I also think it plays into the sports science stuff regarding rest. And I'm not necessarily saying, you know, in-season rest, which I do think has its importance, and one of the reasons I'm loving what I'm seeing out of the Warriors, because if you go down the line with, you know, injuries that maybe weren't major injuries, but allowed their four major guys, Green, Durant, Thompson, and Curry, all to have some significant rest, whether it was in the regular season leading up to the playoffs or in Curry's case in the playoffs, gives them a distinct advantage. My point being is that when you look at what happens injury-wise and wear and tear on guys, like, for example, Kristaps Porzingis stood up in front of the media in December and got fried for this, by the way, and said, I'm tired. He declared there's too much on my shoulders. And the New York media fried him over it. He was trying to make a point, and he was right. Because there's the problem with these types of players is not just the minutes, not just what their bodies have to do, but the laboriousness of the minutes, the fact that they're asked to do so much when they're on the floor. So in Porzingis' case, he was trying to say, listen, you're asking a little too much out of me. I don't have enough help here. And where it's thinnest, it tears, guys. And he ended up going down for the year and is going to be out a good chunk of next year, if not the whole year, over this. So what has happened here with all this is the sports science behind rest has become that much important. And I'll say certain things like, listen, some of these guys, I don't think they should be playing summer basketball. I don't think they should be playing an international competition. There is such thing as playing too much for some of these guys. And I do think guys that have developed injury histories, I mean, if you're a Philadelphia fan, you never want to see Joel Embiid playing in the Olympics or playing in the World Cup. You don't want any of that.
Yeah, meanwhile, Victor Oladipo is texting his trainer like, let's get in the gym
tomorrow.
Right now, yeah.
Which is all well and good. And I'm sure Oladipo will be ready for next season and be in great shape, but that's not for everybody. And I think when you get guys that have injury histories and stuff kind of isn't the thing, that's what Kawhi Leonard's dealing with here. Kawhi Leonard's got an issue that is, you know, right now he's kind of come to grips with the fact that that tendon and that quad may never, ever be the same. And so when you have a situation like this and you have to play around it, rest plays an enormous role. And I think some of that rest, which doesn't take place enough, should be happening over the summer. Not everybody's a freak like Dirk and can go play all summer and then come back and be effective. I mean, even Dirk at this point, obviously very old, but he for years was able to do that. Yeah. I kind of think those days should end sooner rather than later.
I just wonder how a league that is so bent on having star players on the floor every minute possible that abhors the idea of sitting guys for a road trip or any kind of prospect of tanking, my God, I wonder how they would square with some of the more and better and more corroborated medical evidence that we're talking about.
Yeah, listen, I think the way the league operates with rest, and I think more than what happens with rest, let's face it, they could care less if players rest up until the point where A, the fans care, and B, the TV networks care, being more important than A. And these rest guidelines that they threw forward aren't because the league found it so objectionable. It's because of the fact that the people that are paying the bills, and paying the bills big time, because even these TV networks are making a ton of money off the NBA right now. NBA business is as good as it's ever been. So I think the league looks at this and says, hey, you know what? When the golden goose is what's complaining, we have to care about it. I think they're fine with rest. I don't think anybody has any big issue with some of this rest stuff, but what they've done is provided rest guidelines. Rest guys at home. And what you saw this year more than anything else, and keep in mind when you go to games missed by injury, is that teams took very minor types of things, listed them as injuries, so it was a disguise for resting players. That happened this year. Okay, that happened a lot. So you go games missed by injury. Listen, guys sat games they didn't need to sit. I know Steph Curry sat games he didn't need to sit. Durant sat games he didn't need to sit based upon injury. They claimed it was an injury. It was guys resting. And you're going to see more of that going forward. And that's really to assuage the TV networks and let them know, us as a league, we are not rubber stamping a poorer product being on the court that you're paying for, and hence a product that will make you less money on your investment.
Geltzy, you're always great. Thank you.
Guys, my pleasure always. We'll talk soon. Take care.
Brian Geltzeiler.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.